For those of you who don't know me, I'm Joe Hollander, the Chair of the Engineer Charitable Trust, and I also chair the Palmerston North Defence Heritage Advisory Committee. It's great to see you all today on such a beautiful day. Today is a little different. We normally have military history or heritage topics in these midday monthly military presentations, but Patrick approached me a couple of years ago and said, look, would you like to know a little bit about the Tower of London? And I thought, well, that's connected, why not? And of course, being a good military man, I thought, let's do something different. Instead of getting death by PowerPoint, let's have a notable speaker talk about his military experiences and those within the Tower of London. Pat, as many of you will know, served in the New Zealand Army for some 29 years, and when he retired around about 1990, he decided that he wanted more adventure and went down on the ice to the Antarctic, and I'll let him talk more about that. Having frozen his butt off, he decided he'd try something different, and that's when Pat and his lovely wife Dawn went to the UK and became a beef eater at the Tower of London. But the notable point is he owned water. He was the first non-British military person to become a yeoman warder at the Tower for another 16 odd years. So without further ado, would you please welcome Pat Nolan.
Thank you very much, Joe. Okay, well, g'day. My name's Patrick Nolan. I am currently more than 50 years old, so I can get a free jab. I've never worked in my life. No, truly, I sort of joined the army at 15, and that was fun. And then I went to the Antarctic, which was even better than fun. And then I was a yeoman warder for 16 years, and it was even more fun. And then I came home and Dawn found me a job working for a funeral company. And that was a dead-end job. Yeah, they reckon people were dying to see us. All the last people in the world to let you down. Yeah. No, there's lots of jobs. Regular force cadet. How many of you have... You poor buggers. No, there are two sorts of people in the world. There are ex-cadets and those that wish they could. Isn't that true, no. David? You're lying, sorry. Okay. Regular force cadets, and I was posted within Wairu again. Posted to Wairu workshops, and when I finished my apprenticeship, I was... At this stage, the battery had been in Vietnam and it needed reinforcing, and they didn't have very many people to reinforce them. And they gave an opportunity for other corps and organisations to go to Vietnam as part of the artillery. There wasn't a lot going on in the army at the stage. Malaya and Borneo had finished. Vietnam was just starting to kick on. But people were doing 20 years in the army, and they'd been to Wairu, Burnham, Linton, yeah, for those sappers, yeah, Linton. And that was about it. So the opportunity to go to Vietnam, I was 20, early 20s, I needed to change and get out of Wairu. So away we went. Up to the battery, I became a driver operator, which I thought was wonderful. All I'm going to do is tool around in a vehicle. And what it really meant was I put a great big radio upon my back and took my Volkswagens. And as I was a forward observer, I did a lot of walking carrying this radio. But while I was still under the training, I went to Whenuapai to do a parachute course. and saw this charming young lady, all the lumps and the bumps in the right place, as they do. The food was absolutely phenomenal, and she was all right too. So I pursued her with vigour. And then she caught me, and we got wed. And then someone got shot, so I had to go to Vietnam early. So 12 days after we got wed, I was on the big old Herc and off to Vietnam. Finished my tour over there and came home, and Dawn, she'd had a baby. Oh, was he lovely. Well, it wasn't really, it was about that long. And didn't look that nice really. And all it did was yellow smell. If one end wasn't going, it was the other one. Oh, God. Yeah. Come on in. Don't apologise. Just take a seat. There we go. Is your mum coming in?
She's back.
No, she's lucky she's done a runner. Right. So, we were posted to Linton and to Nauru, Wahia, and then a bit later on we went to Singapore. Came home from there and just sort of blundered and bumbled around the corridors of power. And wasn't too bad, I suppose. And the opportunity came when a lot of the middle management was brought out in the late 80s, early 90s. And we took the opportunity to hang up our pistol belt, and we went on a holiday. Well, hang on, we went to the Middle East before that. And on the way home from the Middle East, Dawn came over, and we came home through London. And while we were there, we went to the Tower. Saw a bloke dressed something like this. His uniform wasn't quite as tight. And he had a group of people in the palm of his hand. He was talking to them. He was taking the mickey. He was being quite blatantly rude, asking Australians, "Are you from Australia?" I said, "Yeah." They said, "Oh, you're here for the culture." Yeah, and they'd ask an American if they were there to learn English. You know, just the little throwaway knives going in. And I spoke to him after the meeting, or after this tour. It was a six-stop short history of the Tower. And when he had finished, I said, "Well, how do you become whatever it is you are?" And he said, "You've got to have done at least 22 years in the military. You must have your long service and good conduct medal. You are expected to be married." Oh, God. "Happy married?" He said, no, one or the other. "You have to maintain a dwelling within the walls of the Tower. You have to have been a sergeant major or its equivalent in the Army, the Air Force, or the Royal Marines. And basically be a good, all-round good egg." Well, excuse me. I figured I'd met all the criteria. And I said, "Well, where do I sign up?" And he looked down his nose and he said, "My God, we've never had a colonial before." Well, this was the challenge. So we found out it starts with a letter. So we wrote to them. And they wrote to us. And we wrote to them. And so a small rainforest was sacrificed. But in the end, they said that if Dawn and I wished to go to London and submit ourselves to an interview, we would be graded similarly to any other equally qualified British chap. So we figured out, yeah, okay, I've just given that English chap the beefies, I've given him the finger, so we're okay. Then, of course, the buyout, so Dawn and I retired. And with a group of retired warrant officers and wives, we went on a holiday. Gallipoli for Anzac Day, 75th in fact. Greece, Crete, Rhodes, and into Italy. And we followed the Second New Zealand Expeditionary Force. And that was educational, it was fun, it was hilarious, and at times it was terribly, terribly sad. Finding some of Dawn's ancestors buried in the German cemetery on Crete was one of the highlights. Yeah, so we had it both. Dad was on the other side. So that was quite emotional. We came home and we stayed in London for 3 months. We took a dwelling. We got a flat in Trafalgar Road in Greenwich. And we had arranged at some stage of it, and we went to the interview. Well, that was something in itself. We were met at the gate by the resident governor, who was a retired major general. Tall, slim, elegant, well-spoken, dash nice fellow. And it was the eve of the All Blacks, funnily enough, playing England at Twickers. So he said, and how are the Blacks going to go, Mr. Knopper? And I said, well, I don't know. I think you better ask her, you see, because her brother's the All Black. Oh, he said, my dear, do come. And he hooked her on his arm and away they went. And I said, well, can I come too? You know, if you must. And anyway, my dear, and away they went. Now, General Tyler, CB, was the chairman of the panel that selected the rugby union referees for internationals. So he was well up with the play. So we went to his home. Now, his home was the house that Henry VIII had built for Anne Boleyn. Yeah, in the Tower. What was a cracking house. And we had this meeting. Yeah, it was pretty flash. They had this sitting around the table. There was the general, chief yeoman warder, the administrative boss, the colonel, and Dawn and myself. A couple of tea, little Vickies, standing as their corners off. And it was going all right. And this table we were sitting around, it was pretty bit bigger than one of these. And it had a few cracks. You know, the old barn, it had had a hard life. You could see where the dog had been chewing on the rail that you put your feet on the bottom. Well, I figured that with the price it cost to get into the tower, they could have bought a nice one with a bit of formica on the top. And, you know, there was a little silver plate. And that said that this was the table around which the committee sat when they sentenced Guy Fawkes to death. Now, some of you may have heard of Guy Fawkes. He was a famous Italian Englishman. A bit like Pizza Hut, I suppose. Yeah, and he had gonna, and I reckon he was shabbily treated. You know, he was a bloke doing what he felt a man should do to make the world a better place. The last good idea to go to a British Parliament. He was going to blow it up and start again. But anyway, so at the end of the meeting, I asked the general, I realise it's not form, and he said, Mr. Nolan, anybody who has the wit to marry the sister of an All Black is obviously going to be an asset to the Tower of London. We'll wait for one of these old trouts out here to pop his clogs, and we'll write you a letter, and you can come and be a yeoman warder. Well, that sounded all right. So we came home, and as Joe had said, went to the Antarctic, and that was everything I thought it could have been, with bells and whistles. It was truly a stupendous 6-7 months. It was absolutely wonderful. We came home, Dawn had taken up management of Brookfield Scout Camp. Yeah. And I came back, and I, of course, was going to be the Department of Labour. So we got that place beaten into shape. A bit later on, we got a letter, sold absolutely everything, and went to the UK. We arrived at the tower, suitcase, bags, and the man said, oh, we haven't got your quarters ready yet. So we stayed with a friend of ours and commuted. And it gave me a chance to think about this place where we were going to work and live. The tower was built by William the Conqueror in 1078. That's sort of a couple of hundred years before Maori arrived in New Zealand. That puts it into... It's scary. He saw the same bricks and blocks in exactly the same place as I did. It was mind-boggling. It was overwhelming. On the work scene, I was given a uniform from the quartermaster's store that didn't fit. And a hat, which didn't fit. The hats are made out of wax linen. And if they don't fit, they don't fit, and you get stinking headaches, but this one seems to. Mark Todd gets them from the same people. $2,000 a pop. Anyway, so I got a hat and a uniform and a mentor. And all of a sudden, people would come and say, oh, there's a beef eater. I could do the pictures all right, you know, because that's a... that pictures are good. But the knowledge was a bit of a worry, so I'd have to defer to my colleague. But one of the first things I learned was you don't use slang. Slang is dangerous. The majority of the people who go to the tower, they want to speak English. Or they do sort of kind of speak English, like the Americans and the Aussies. Slang is a definite no-no. As an instance, nobody gets upset in New Zealand if you use the word bugger. But for someone who's learning English, ooh, you catch the drift? You do not use slang. The questions were difficult, but you defer to your mentor, you listen to how he answers it, and you pick it up very, very quickly. We were also given a script, and we had to learn the script. Like a parrot, I'm in my mid to late 40s, and I get about 20 pages. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Her Majesty's Royal Palace and Fortress, the Tower of London. Come with me for the next hour or so, and I will take you on a tour of the tower, point ad infinitum. A 6-stop tour, abbreviated history, like the Reader's Digest version of it. You had to pause on the commas and take a breath on the full stops, and you had to repeat it as it was written down. I had a mentor, as I told you, and we would be out there from 6:30 to 7:30 every morning, and I would be roaring my head off to Tony, who was saying, do it again, do it again. It was George the First, not George the Sixth. It was Walter Raleigh, not Francis Drake. And just little things, and you had to, I had to say things in the British way. We shift houses. British people move. So just those little things. But anyway, it took about 3 months, at the end of which Dawn and I were invited to go to
St James's Palace.
That's one of the ones I have trouble remembering on the fly. And at St James's Palace, I swore an oath using words like, "And in whomsoever lieth, and I shall be servant to, and those above and below me," and so on and so forth. And when I'd finished that, I wasn't 351 Yeoman Warder Patrick Nolan. I was 351 Yeoman Warder Patrick Nolan, Yeoman of the Guard and Extraordinary Bodyguard to the Sovereign of Her Majesty's Royal Palace and Fortress, the Tower of London, .com.nz. Yeah. I was an extraordinary member of the Yeoman of the Guard. Gilbert and Sullivan got it wrong. That gave me the right to wear this uniform. I was an extraordinary to the numbers of the Yeoman of the Guard. We supplemented them. Right, so that's where the extraordinary bit came in. Gave us the right to wear this. Yeah, cost £13,000. And at the time, £13,000 was 39,000 New Zealand dollars. And you could have put a deposit on a house with that. Yeah, absolutely beautiful. Now, when you watch the Her Majesty and all that thing, you're going to see a lot of this uniform. Yeoman warders wear a belt. Yeoman of the Guard wear one, but they also wear a diagonal cross belt. Now, that diagonal cross belt goes through the epaulette. Right. So if you see some old chap wearing this uniform, stand still. There we go. So if you see a chap wearing this uniform with a diagonal belt, he is a Yeoman of the Guard. He's a territorial. He lives at home. He comes down to London, takes his uniform out the locker, puts it on, goes out, struts his stuff, and then comes back and chucks it in a heap, and the lady takes it away and dry cleans it. Yeoman of the Guard. They do not have a blue uniform like I do. The blue uniform came in 1846. Because those were too dear. Right, so the questions. The questions, my God. Questions.
What is the fabric made of?
Serge. And it's quilted. It's that thick in the front. And the back. No, the questions. There's a sign that says, "Site of the Scaffold." So people say, how often do people get executed? Yeah. Once is enough for most people. Yeah. They look at the sign and say, where do people get their heads cut off? Just there. Yeah. Did Jane Grey write her name on the wall before or after she had a head cut off? Poor old Jane. Yeah, it was obviously after, because before she was dishing out her prayer book and her gloves and things to her ladies-in-waiting. Oh, well. Tower Bridge. That's the bridge that's open when it's closed and closed when it's open. You know, the big one. That's Tower Bridge. Everybody of the 5% of Americans who own a passport comes to the tower And they say, why do they paint London Bridge blue? And so you point it out a kilometre down the river and say, no, it's grey, it's concrete. They say, no, 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 there is London Bridge. So some people are so bloody stupid. Truly, I've been accused of altering the map for tourists so that it shows London Bridge. Well, anyway, we had a talk to this particular lady, 5 minutes, trying to convince her that Tower Bridge was, in fact, Tower Bridge. And at the end, she walked away and she says, I'm not getting any sense here. Anyway, what side of the river's that damn bridge on? You know, we keep a book. Yeah, the line book. Those stupid things that people ask without realising how stupid they sound. excuse me, I've got Ebola this week. This uniform is worn on high days, holy days, and the Queen Mum's birthday. We wear it to church on the three occasions we are obliged to go to church, which is Christmas, Easter, and Whit Sunday. And what starts off about an hour before we are to report to the governor's residence. So generally, get up and put on a t-shirt or something and some undies, and then you put on your tights. Now these are boys' tights. No, truly. I don't understand the mechanics of the... but we'll leave it at that. So you put your tights on, then you put breeches on, and the breeches buckle up below the knee. And on the breeches, on the knee, one puts the rosette. You can all come into the play with this later. And that goes on there. Your shoes have a buckle on the front, a rosette on them as well. Then you climb into your coat. And that coat is buttons up under the arm, just like this one, and along the shoulder. And it folds over, and it's quilted. And then it folds over the other way, so you can do up the buttons. So you're pretty well restrained. And once you've got that on, you have, of course, the ruff that I forgot to mention. And this is made out of starched linen. Great big miles of it, and they just put it on the machine with all these fingers. You don't wash it, because being starch, it will just look soggy. And that's worn around the neck, and it tucks up if you wish to have it tucked up, or it lays flat if you want to look like a Muppet. So you get your jacket on, then you put the bells on, and you've got a thingy on the other side, which is where one's sword goes. We're given a gentleman's sword, you see, and it goes down through the through that thing there and sticks down out the back. And it's not, may I borrow your sword, please, Milton? Thank you. So we've got the sword down through the thing. And goes down here, you see. Down there. Which is pretty good. But you've got dressed up in your flat. And the staircase is 27 inches wide. Okay, which isn't very wide. And you've also got a partisan, which is a big, long, pointy thing. 2 yards of English ash, with this big steel thing on the top and a little shoe on the bottom. And that's a bit awkward. So you're walking down, you've got your hat, you see. Your Tudor bonnet. And your gloves. And a sword. As you go down the stairs, you find that the sword runs down the outside of your leg and gets stuck in the bottom in his shoe. Now, it's got a little brass cap on the end, which tends to grind bits of mutton off. So I thought I was going to be really cunning, and I turned the belt around so it was sticking. So the sword, instead of digging holes in my leg there, I move it around. There, see? And it went near the inside of the leg and dug hunks out of the other leg. So I moaned to my dear sweet wife about this, and she said, if you want to wear tights to work, princess, you can just suck it up. Which was rather cruel of her. She was at that stage a cruel, mean woman. But anyway, so we go over to the governor's house, and he'd give us sherry. And the sherry was really, really memorable. It comes in plastic bottles, which says, do not open near varnish surfaces. It was Lithuanian sherry. You know, really, really, really world known in Lithuania. Yeah. So you'd have a little and flick it in the old planter. Well, after 32 blokes had done this, before we actually got outside the old tree and had a bad attack of death. So, yeah, they next time we went, did the, you know, plastic plants. Yeah, and it had leached all of the colour out of the bottom of the stems, and the wire inside had started to rust. God, it was terrible. But anyway, so we'd have a drink and pop outside, and we would be inspected by the resident governor or the constable. Constable was generally a field marshal or a four-star general. Yeah, so he wouldn't mind his pension. Anyway, so he'd sort of walk past and say, oh, hello, how are you today? And sort of get out the front. He'd inspect us. We would turn to the right, and he would waddle on out. Yeoman waters by the quick march. And so we'd all sort of got this big pointy thing over your shoulder, 8 foot of it, nearly 9 feet, and we had sort of stately, ponderous, looked like bloody rhinoceroses. But anyway, one of my colleagues who joined the body about the same time as me, the body of Yeoman Warders, his name was Idwell, tall, slim guardsman. But cook brekkies because it's cold, come home for smoko, mix up some batter, and he'd have toast and Marmite. Lunch, toasted sandwiches, of course, last night's roast. Afternoon tea would be the batter made into pikelets, a little bit of jam on. Tea, of course, roast dinner. So he, of course, was given a series of shrinking uniforms. And it was the funniest thing I ever heard an American say. Old Edwell's busy plonking along. And an American says, hey, honey, get a picture of that one there. He looks like an Easter egg. And, my God, he did. Anyway, the uniform. I took a friend of mine to an occasion where the Queen and Prince Philip were visiting the tower. And this friend of mine was foreign. And she was leaning over the barrier watching the Queen just walking away. And this voice is, oh, hello, how did you get a ticket here? And she said, go away, that's the Queen, don't you know? And Prince Philip said, yes, I do, actually. People get all excited. I was invited to become the RSA representative in Great Britain and Europe. And that was absolutely astonishingly wonderful, a door opener. I served on a committee with Prince Philip. There were five of us. the Royal Commonwealth Ex Services League, and we would pop down to his place, 2 monthly, and he never put the bickies on, but he'd walk in the door and he'd say, "Oh good God, 30 seconds late. I did leave home on time, you know." Yeah. So he was neat. He was clever. He was astute. He had a very good memory. And he had a really cool sense of humour. He wasn't the plonker that the papers portrayed him, but the royals can't fight back. Anyway, the first occasion that Dawn and I were invited to was in St. Martin's in the Field in Trafalgar Square for the Victoria Cross and George Cross church service. And we had this little gilt-edged, and it was gilded-edged, invite. So we gave it to the chap and he goes, one of the big plonk thing over his shoulder, and he walked us in and down and down, down and down, further down and down. Golly gosh. And a bit later on, the service started. In the front row was Queen Mum. Next row back was Molly Upham and the daughters. Next row back was the Duke of Wellington. Next row back was the Nolans, who with a new hat on. Behind us, the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And way the hell down here was the High Commissioner for New Zealand. And it was George Gere, and he was a cracker. And he said, "God, you must have some influential friends, Patrick." And I said, "Well, you know, it's not who you know, George." No, he was a cracker. We had half the New Zealand Army turned up and wanted bed, feed, get in for nothing. That just about covers it. Yeah. No, they could buy those at the shop. Yeah. Who else did we go and see, Dawn? We went to the VE Day and we're sitting from me to you away from Her Majesty being the New Zealand representative of the returned servicemen. And the old planes went over, Battle of Britain flight. "Go left, go left. That'll do. Bomb doors open. Bombs away." And as he said that, all of these poppies came out. A million of them. And God, it was, there was just a from the crowd. And then there was a great cheer. And the chaplain was flying those four engines. You've heard the Spitfire, right? This thing had four of them. Four Spitfire engines roaring away, and he said, "Good God, you can hear the crowd. There are a million people in Hyde Park, and the noise of those people he could hear above the engines." Oh, golly. We went to Her Majesty's Golden Jubilee. She gave me that one. Oh, yeah. Philip P. O'Shea and the then Governor General, the only others who can wear that one. She gave it to me. Yeah, the little lady with the hat. And we had a party at Buckingham Palace. And all the royals, well, hang on, we had a rehearsal. And the Bentley pulled up. And the door was there, so I opened the door. And out she popped. "Well, good afternoon, Your Majesty." And she said, "Oh, hello. Oh, what are you chaps doing here?" We said, "Oh, rehearsal for your parade tomorrow." She said, "Oh, that's right. Well, enjoy yourselves." And she popped off inside up the stairs. And the windows are about as big as that bit of cloth up there. And there's this tiny little lady pulling the curtains back, walked over, pushed a chair up, put her feet up on the windowsill, handbag by her side, and was watching us out the window. The following day, all the royals were there. The yeoman warders, the yeoman of the guard, some of the Chelsea Pensioners, the Military Knights of Windsor, and the Archers of Scotland. They're all peers. And at the rehearsal, as they marched off, Lord this, Lord that, Lord something else, our trust board chairman was the leader, the senior knight of the Royal Knights. No, the Archers of Scotland. They kept, got a big longbow and two arrows. And they busy marching off past the body. They didn't give us an eye's lift, you see, we were all standing to attention. And some bloody colonial started. And Lord Ainslie turned around and said, "You bastard, Nolan, I shall see you after this." We did see him after that. He called for me, I was at work, and he called for me to go to his flat. And when we got up there, he said, "Look what I've got." And he opened this big box, and he had been given the Royal Victorian Chain, which is right up there. And it was absolutely beautiful. And he had broken his journey to come into the tower because he knew that I was interested in medals and memorabilia and stuff. We found that generally the more important some of these people are, the less nonsense there is about them. They don't need to impress anybody. One of my committee members for the Royal Commonwealth and I were sitting in Westminster Abbey for an Anzac service, and this nice lady leaned over and went whack whack with her order of service, smacked the two of us upon our knuckles and said, "If you don't stop horsing around, I'll send you outside." And this was Lord Slim of Burma and myself. She was, didn't really matter who it was, we weren't to be naughty and talk in church. John Slim was a cracker. Big bloke, did 3 years in SAS, and just after he'd been commissioned, he was posted to Burma, and his dad was running the Burma bit, and he said, called in to see him, came to attention, saluted at the desk, and his dad says, "Is your mother aware that you are here?" And he said, "No, sir." And he said, "She is not going to be best pleased. Now get out and look after your men." And he said, "Welcome to Burma." Yeah. Now he was a delightful man. Now I've got two Ed questions, Hillary. Or Joe will start pulling his hair out.
Ed Hillary?
Eh?
Ed Hillary's do.
Ed Hillary went to his service. Oh yeah, golly. That was in the Garter Chapel at Windsor. And they've got all of these stalls. They're big awkward things to sit in, big. And all down on the inside of them are little brass plates with all of the knights of the Garter who had had that particular stall in the years they were in there. So you're reading stuff from 1200, all these little brass plates. And I was sitting directly opposite Ed Hillary's stall that didn't have anybody in it and no banner up there. And that was very, very emotional. And as we walked out of the chapel, we were sitting in the choir. As we walked out of the chapel, there's the screen. And we got through the crowd. And I saw someone familiar. And this is just after Anzac Day. And this lady who was sitting there, I said, "Didn't you used to be the Prime Minister?" And Helen Clark said, "I still am, but I've walked on." She mucked up my Anzac parade. I used to run the Anzac parade in Whitehall, and I did that for 15 years. The High Commissions, Australia and New Zealand, take alternate years, but I lived in London we could get the continuity going. And we found this. Okay, so we stopped there one day. The traffic had stopped on the other side of the road, and there was an impatient white van man who's the blight of all Londoners, and he was going, doo, 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 doo. So we'd had the last post, and the taxi driver who was in front of him climbed out, indicated he should wind down his window, and he explained what was going on. Went back to his taxi, and this bloke started toot, 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 tooting again. And the taxi driver climbed out of his taxi, went down, indicated him to wind his window down, and went boom! And then reached in and hung him over the steering wheel so he didn't bleed on his trousers. The policeman who was standing in front of me said, "Oh, good thing I blinked then, otherwise I might have seen an horrible assault."
Patrick.
No, we had some wonderful things happen. It was just a joy. Patrick, 48 million people came through the tower in our 16 years there. 48 million people.
Ed Hillary's regalia. What happened?
Oh, yeah. The Field Marshal, Lord Inge. He came to me. And he wanted to see me in his flat, so I popped up there. And he said, oh, look at this. And he flipped this Order of the Garter regalia in his box. And I said, oh, nice blazer badge. And he said, yes. And on the garter that's worn the wrong way, they've got this oval thing called the Lesser George. And all of this regalia is to be returned on the death of the recipient. And I said, okay, who had this? And he said, some bloody colonial. And then he walked around the table and he gave me a thump on the shoulder. He says, it's Big Ed's. He was so proud to wear the regalia that Ed Hillary had. And I said, well, who was... He said, oh, God. Wolseley, Arthur Wolseley, Duke of Wellington.
Wellesley.
Yeah, but he wasn't worried. The fact that he had the Lesser George that Ed Hillary had was, it really impressed a field marshal who at that stage had 1 million armed men and women under his direct command. Okay, questions quickly. Joel, please hear him.
Oh, look, if I don't wind him up now, he'll be going for another couple of hours, won't you, Pat?
Yes, dear.
Seriously. Look, we do have time for questions, so are there any questions from the audience?
So where does the expression beef eater come
We don't know. We do not know. People have been calling us beef eaters. It could have been because we ate beef. Could have been because we were fed beef when everybody else was eating mutton. We just don't know. It's evolved over the centuries. The earliest writing of it's around 1200.
So not from the shrinking uniform?
No. Hey, have you got any... Here we go. Do you want to play silly buggers, Joe?
No.
No, seriously, have you got anything you wear that was made for you 16 years ago?
Probably. Yes. Yeah, I wore it on Antique Day.
Yeah.
No, a suit. Any other questions? Questions?
What sort of weight is that?
Well, you can come and play with it when I finish.
It's about 16 kilos.
I don't know.
Fully loaded.
I've never weighed it. It's like your pack when you're a soldier.
Of course, this is all gold. Gold brocade. So, and the padding is. Imagine doing that on a summer day.
You tried that up there?
Yeah.
When I come home, it was not uncommon to have the back of it had a big sweat patch in it. I would, with my next-door neighbour, would hang onto the sleeves and walk out of it, and you'd hang it up, after you'd hosed it down, hang it up in the garage, hose it right down. Now, if you get the stink of armpit in there, you're never going to get it out. And these things there are nearly 300 pounds a pop. There used to be three firms who made them when they were 100. And now there's only one firm that makes them, and they're 300. Yeah.
And your tights never ladder, which annoyed me.
It's got a hole in it.
Yeah, I know. But they didn't ladder.
Sorry, there was another question.
I was going to ask you about the ravens.
The ravens, horrible bloody
things. Do they have spare ravens? Because I know we're not supposed to have no ravens or dead ravens.
Should the ravens leave the Tower of London, the White Tower would crumble and collapse. It symbolically would bring down the monarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Harry Windsor is the name of the new one. Yeah. They are horrible things. And it all started with Charles II restored to the throne. He's dead, had his head cut off. We've had old Cromwell. And then we had Charles II. And he was an astronomer. And he had this wonderful telescope on the roof of the White Tower. And after the fire, there were no trees left in London. So all the birds would come to the tower that did have, because someone fired a couple of arrows and made a fire break all around the tower. So Charles II said to his master of the hunt, get rid of these damn birds. And he said, well, if the ravens leave, you're going to be out of a job. So he said, get rid of them all except six. All early days in the tower, a lady sitting down with the legs crossed, skinny matchsticks legs and things, and she had a coat thrown back. And one of the ravens, it was a mink, and one of the ravens was up there busy plucking great hunks of mink fur out of her coat. And so she went like, oh, that comedian.
Kenny Everett.
Across the legs.
Kenny Everett.
Kenny Everett. She did one of those, and the raven hopped off the coat, down to the ground, up and started plucking it out the other sleeve. So she had two matching patches of bald mink. They're horrid. They really are. They're about this tall. And they're clever. They're a bit spooky, actually. If someone dies, you'll find the whole unkindness. All six of them will be lurking around their quarters.
Of the person dying.
Of the person dying, yeah. And that happened in our time with Eddie's wife. Spooky.
Any other final questions? Yep.
So, do you recognise those two gentlemen, the two photographs?
No, he's new.
Yeah, they knew you. To be honest.
Oh, he did. That bloke there, his name's Andy, and he was a lovely, lovely man. And he was playing rugby for Army. He was obviously a prop. He had found himself embarrassingly with the ball. The line was over there and he was on his own. And away he went, sprinting down there, dived over the line, and everyone else had given up and were laughing at him, you see. But he pinned his ears back and he was off. And Tim Rodber, who played for England, he came up to him later, put his arm around him and said, you know what, Andy? You are deceptively slow. Yeah.
Right, well look, I know that some people have to go back to work, so I think they'll have to pull the quits at this stage. So, look, Pat, thanks very much. Really interesting, and I know you could go on with a whole lot more stories about all your experiences, particularly in the Tower. But I mean, it's something that, you know, some who've travelled through London have seen before. But to get first-hand information about what goes on and what you experienced over your 15 or 16 years there, I think it's been really great. So will you please join me in thanking Pat.
You are very, very welcome. Thank you all for turning up.